Do you want more energy, better sleep, and better health? Who wouldn't? Get a free Scalar Light no obligation 15-day trial at scalarlight.com.
Today, we are going to go on a rant.
Yes, a little bit of a rant.
A mini it's rant good. At the beginning.
Yes.
And then after that, we're going to discuss this one paper that talked about the benefits of a keto-like diet or a modified Atkins diet. Honestly, I never thought that I would actually hear about Atkins diet at this day and age, which is pretty sad.
Yes.
So we're going to discuss that paper and show you the flaws in science and how people are actually misled.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a dangerous time. There's always false science and fallacy in general, and untruths and obfuscation and all those other words that gives it a nuance, but it's basically lying throughout history. And then there's misunderstanding, and then there's level of context of a truth. We always say, even if it's a truth, if you overstate it for a given time or understate it, it's a fallacy. So
kind of getting cozy.
Yeah, but here we're actually now facing another level, which is the social media and how social media can be manipulated by powerful forces to affect science.
You bet, absolutely.
But even one level even further, how science itself can be affected by money and by... And I know that as soon as I say this, people say, oh, the pharmaceutical industry is... But this is a different level.
It is.
It's critical because public health is already suffering. And we are not doing well when it comes to chronic diseases and with the disease of aging and diseases that deal with a public forum and public health. Mm-hmm. And now with noise and fallacy and blatant lies, and it's just becoming incredibly difficult to promulgate and spread information accurately.
Mm-hmm.
I always say we were very much in resistance against going to social media, but now we realize the importance of being on social media. It's a new forum. You have to adapt. You have to be in the battlefield, in the front lines.
Absolutely.
And try to speak to the truth as much as you can, despite all the chaos that's out there.
Absolutely.
And the chaos starts because there's an audience for it.
Mm-hmm.
The audience is all of us. We all have things that we like. Things that we have deep connections to, things that we want confirmation for, and there are some smart people out there that will give you your confirmation with the right manipulation of data and marketing, and that's bewilderingly dangerous.
It is.
I would love to talk about the science alone and just do research and then let the product of the research come out in public health and what happens at the city level, at the community level, which we also work in.
Yeah.
But we're not even able to get the right information out there with so much noise out there.
There is a lot of noise. There is a lot of confusion.
We're going to use some papers as examples.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
But there's much more to it. There are books out there where smart businessmen who know that people want to know that bacon is medicine, and it's not.
Yeah.
And they will write a book for you and find enough cherry-picked papers and their opinions and case studies to kind of create a whole, feeling that there is this, there's some meaning to this.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, they sell their vitamins that counteract that. There are a lot of books like that, and that they're the funnel for selling vitamins.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And funnel for selling you easy ways of doing things. Oh, if I avoid tomatoes, everything else I do is fine. But as long as I avoid tomatoes, that's great.
Nightshades.
Yeah.
Lectins.
And it's not like that. It's much more complicated than that. And it has to be even at the city level, at district level. And that's what we're hoping to do. In fact, much of what we do on our charity side, Healthy Minds Initiative and others, is to spread that information, spread that what happens in your house and in your community is real healthcare. Hospitals and clinics are sick care, but healthcare is in your communities. And it takes more than just removing one thing or adding one vitamin to change your health status.
Yeah. couldn't agree more. It's time for us to understand the complexity of health, and especially complexity of brain health. And I think we've talked about this many times in the past as well. When it comes to, you know, science now or public health, everybody's waiting for sound bites and, you know, sweet titles that they can cling on to and understand and absorb. But that's not how it works.
Well,
and
although our title, Crap Science, was a little eye-catchy, that was all Aisha. I'm just too calm and gentle for that kind of language.
Right.
She pushed that. But it's all that eye-catchy.
Agreed.
How many, the number of followers.
It's all about the number of followers. It's all about, you know, the quick fixes. And I think that's how journalism works. So we wanted to take this time and go over this one paper that is just all over the news. It's on Medscape, it's on Neuroscience News, about ketogenic diet being effective in a population of dementia.
And the reason we wanted to kind of highlight this, and there will be other papers that we'll talk about as well, is that you'll see that how weak this paper is.
We wanted to kind of just parse it out for you so you can see for yourself how the title is actually different from the content of the paper itself.
And how a weak paper like this, and there's only a couple of other papers like this, and when it comes to ketogenic diet, can overtake the healthcare system and replace the volumes, thousands of papers and research and years of work that has been done by, and that's because there's a machine, there's a system that actually brings that to the surface. So we'll go over this paper and others as well, and give you hopefully the tools, and you can, it's a backward forward communication, please.
Yes.
Ask questions, but to give you the ability to kind of figure out that when there's data that comes out, you know, especially mouse models or
right.
animal models,
right. Right.
Every day there's something else that cured another mouse from Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Every day. Or another one paper that says that we have found a cure for, you know, stroke or heart disease or dementia for that matter. But and that noise, for a lot of people, they don't fall for it. But what it will do is kind of makes you throw your arms out and up and say, oh, forget it. I'm just going to do whatever I want. But that's also not the way, because 99.5% of the population is not eating healthy foods.
Right. That's true. Yeah. We have objective evidence for that.
Yeah.
To everybody who's sending us love on Instagram, love to you back. And Facebook, love to you back. Carol, it's really nice seeing you. And with that, let's go ahead and start the paper.
Yes.
Okay, so the paper was recently published, and the title was, you know, it's actually a preliminary report on feasibility and efficacy of modified Atkin diet, which is essentially a ketogenic diet, for treatment of mild cognitive impairment and early Alzheimer's disease. And so this was published, I believe it later in June. And it looks at the modified Atkins diet, ketogenic diet, or a high-fat diet in a small population. So they basically, if you look at the report, it says the preliminary report. But the way it was, you know, made into a big bombast on Medscape was just incredibly crazy. It basically said that, you know, a modified Atkins diet or a keto-like diet may be effective in mild cognitive impairment and Alzheimer's disease. And to kind of go over some of the details, this is what actually was published on Medscape. Keto-like diet may improve cognition in MCI, early Alzheimer's. Boom, really catchy, right? No, but when you look at the details, you'll find out what it actually is. So it was a phase one or phase two randomized clinical trial examining the feasibility or the ease of using modified Atkins diet, MAD diet, of course, to induce ketogenesis in people with mild cognitive impairment and or Alzheimer's disease, and to find out how that actually affected memory and clinical outcome. And it was a rather small study. So in about 2.5 years, they were able to recruit only 27 eligible people. And if you look at the inclusion and exclusion criteria, the exclusion criteria involved everything under the moon. So they had to not have diabetes, they had to be hypertension free, they had to have good cholesterol, they had to have basically very little metabolic impairment. And so these individuals were randomized for about 3 months, 12 weeks, to either eating a ketogenic diet or eating a National Institutes on Aging diet, which is essentially a Mediterranean-ish diet. So it includes, you know, fish and olive oil, some dairy products and vegetables. And then
although that was not completely described.
So, you know, in the paper, they actually talk about the NIA diet and what that means, but they essentially labeled it as a Mediterranean diet.
Correct.
So they compared the Atkins diet to the Mediterranean diet, and by April 2018, they had only 9 people in the modified Atkins diet arm, you know, just 9 people, and 5 people in the control diet or the NIA diet, and they had completed the trial. And so they looked at how much they actually produced ketone bodies in the urine, and it was just nominal. It was very, very little.
So the importance of that is that just because you say you're on ketone diet, it doesn't mean that you've achieved the ketone diet. The only way you will have achieved it, which is very difficult for many reasons, that's not even, it shouldn't even be considered because of its flaws,
right,
but because of its sustainability. When you look at large populations, it's almost impossible to sustain a ketone diet, especially if you follow the ketone bodies in the urine.
Right.
So almost nobody achieves true ketosis.
Right, right, absolutely. And so they looked at their neuropsychological scores at the beginning, at week 8, and then at the end of the study, at
which
month 3 as well.
Yeah.
One person actually couldn't complete it, 2 people couldn't complete it, and these were individuals who had mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease, and there was a big factor of, caregiver fatigue. It was very difficult for them to actually adhere to this diet. Obviously, if you're eating 70% of your diet is fat.
Correct.
And there's, you know, less than 10% carbohydrates, that's a really, really tough thing to do. So adherence was very poor. And basically they came up with the statement saying that there was a statistically significant change in their neuropsychological scores or their memory scores. So they actually got better at week 6 and at week 12. But when you look at their data, after the washout period, when they actually stopped the diet, their scores went back down again. And that has been consistent in some of the other ketogenic diet studies that have been studied. So as far as data goes, as far as ketogenic diet itself goes, there have been similar studies in humans that have looked at the effectiveness of ketogenic diet, and again, the same pattern. First of all, compliance is a main issue. Second, after the washout period, when the diet actually stops and they resume their normal life, they tend to have poor scores again, so there's a decline in their memory. And there's not a very good picture of what they actually eat. They give us percentages of, you know, their fat intake, but none of it matters. You know, the type of fat doesn't matter. It's essentially a very low carbohydrate and a high fat diet. And the mechanism that they usually bring in, let me just kind of pull up the slide for our
Facebook.
And by
the way, none of them are long term.
Right.
There is zero studies that looks at ketone diet.
Oh yeah.
Long term.
Nothing that has been looked at beyond 3 months. And the catch is, usually this diet is tested in individuals who already have Alzheimer's disease. So they already have destruction of most of their neurons.
Right.
They have amyloid deposition. So they're basically at the end stage of the disease, and that's why they're manifesting cognitive impairment.
Correct.
And ketone bodies seem to actually help them.
Correct.
Which we talked about, which, you know, basically means that the ketone bodies are a good source of fuel for the brain cells that are already stunned at that stage.
Correct.
Of the disease.
Correct. So they're smaller molecules. They can get right through the blood-brain barrier and right through the cell wall. They don't need receptors.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go to the mitochondria and create energy. I mean, it's a little more complicated than that,
right,
but that's basically it. So that ease of access gives more energy. And,
mm-hmm,
and in itself, it has a little more energy as well. But just because you have more energy,
mm-hmm,
it doesn't mean it's beneficial.
Right.
And just because you see changes in disease states, it doesn't mean that in normal states it's beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
It's like giving chemotherapy for cancer patients.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for cancer
right.
patients, but you wouldn't do that for normal individuals.
Agreed.
In fact, ketone studies and diet came from seizure patients.
Agreed. Yes.
Uncontrolled seizure patients that have been on multiple drugs, a certain population, pediatric. So in a brain that is overwhelmed by seizures, you will do anything to calm the brain down. And so you use ketones, acidify, so that actually calms the brain down. So just because you quieted the brain down in a brain that's overwhelmed, how is that translatable to normal brains?
And by the way, the mechanism is completely different.
You yes. know,
providing fuel versus potential anti-inflammatory effect of ketone bodies in seizure patients are completely different mechanisms. So I find it really funny when everybody just dumps all the neurological diseases in one category and says that ketone or ketogenic diet is actually good for the brain. No, it's not. By the way, we don't even know long term what it does. Let me show you.
Well, we have some evidence that it might be actually harmful because of inflammation and as far as amyloid and all the other pathways. But there is no data that shows that if you continued beyond 6 months, that there would be any benefit.
These three papers, for those who are watching on Facebook, actually shows the relevant papers that describe the effect and the adverse effect associated with ketogenic diet for brain health. The one on the top left shows the feasibility and efficacy data from ketogenic diet intervention in Alzheimer's disease, and it showed that after the washout period, they don't do well. The one on the top right shows the role of ketogenic diet in neurological disorders. And so there's a lot of debate of whether it is the ketogenic diet or the medium-chain triglycerides in the ketogenic diet that seems to help. So very poor data.
Yeah, and again, we say that even the help part is minimal. Mm-hmm. It's nominal. Mm-hmm. And it's never permanent. It's never long-term.
Right.
So, and then the reason we're actually picking on ketone ketogenic diet is because of this study and a couple of other studies that are so weak, yet they got so much light. We would do the same thing for other kind of diets as well.
Of course.
Even if it was a whole food plant-based diet that was weakly designed, we should speak about it because the claims have consequences. Mm-hmm. As it happens, the data on the whole food plant-based diet is profuse. I mean, there's thousands of papers, hundreds of major papers
Agreed.
That have shown over years and years. And the funny thing is the only argument that sometimes, that's old data. Like as if that means something. Old data or new data, they're all data. And even the meta-analysis comes from new data and old data. So there's plenty of data when it comes to whole food plant-based lifestyles and their effect on the brain. Now, the problem with this paper and others, the reason we're highlighting them are there are so few and they're so weak.
Mm-hmm.
Yet in the media, they take over the entire media. Everywhere you turn, you hear these bombastic statements that, a ketogenic diet can actually lower your risk of Alzheimer's, and that's so far from the truth, so far with the evidence that we have.
Yeah.
Because it's completely opposite of the diet that is necessary, which is a whole food, plant-based, low-fat, low-sugar diet.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem that we're facing right now. And the other argument that people usually make, now I'm going to come out of these weak papers, is certain sciences are more absolute, more direct. For example, the experimentation gives you direct outcome, causation.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to sciences such as nutrition, we don't have that causal relation. In fact, for most of public health, we don't have that. Even with cigarettes, we still don't have a causal link. But there was enough evidence for us to say this is strong enough evidence for us to do, stop smoking in certain regions and start not promoting. Remember that in the 1950s, doctors would come out on TV and say cigarettes are good for you; they clear your throat.
Yeah.
When it comes to nutrition, you need multi-dimensional data. I mean, you need data from the cross-sectional, meaning at one time period, retrospective, meaning mm-hmm. looking back. You need data at the molecular level. You need data as far as perspective going forward, clinical trials and otherwise. You need population-based data.
Right.
You don't have any of that when it comes to ketogenic diet and some of the other sciences that are coming out, some of the other facts that are coming out, and or this new movement of biohacking and around vitamins and things of that nature. If you mix this vitamin with, there's no evidence for that. There's absolutely no evidence for that. Whereas for a whole food plant-based diet, we have evidence across the board.
Right.
We don't have causation, and we won't have causation. It's gonna, but we do have enough, strong enough evidence to show that there's a link between, you know, a whole food plant-based and reduction of stroke.
Absolutely.
You, Aisha, did the, one of the largest studies in the country with evidence, with the California Teacher Study, that with a whole food plant-based diet and heart disease, with diabetes, and now with dementia as well, across the board, and immunological diseases. We're talking about cross-sectional, retrospective, population-based data, randomized clinical trials, and then the meta-analysis. The sexy or interesting approach is meta-analysis. Everybody's doing a meta-analysis. Well, the problem with meta-analysis alone is that you can, the outcome depends on what you put into it. Mm-hmm. So the variables you put in, the papers that you put in and you select, and the ones that you don't select, and what variables or dependent variables that you look at, and it is going to determine what outcomes you're going to achieve. That's why you're getting this many contradictory results.
Right.
So I'm actually saying that there's some manipulation going on.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the little rant that we wanted to take on, and we want to make sure that it's a little more than rant. We want to tell you how to look at the data. I mean, look at the data in totality. Look at if it's large enough study.
Right. So at this at an era of sound bites and, you know, short, small amount of information, if you hear anything like this, I think it's very important for all of us to dig deeper and find out where it came from, what the details are. Because, especially with ketogenic diet, and I get really upset about this, is because ketogenic diet can be really, really unhealthy. People always talk about the fact that brain is made up of fat. You know, more than 70% is fat, therefore eat fat because it needs it. And that is such a silly way to look at it. I mean, if we look at the vasculature of the brain, we have, I mean, this is a cool number. We have about 400 miles worth of vessels, arteries in our brain only. I mean, just imagine the amount of, you know, blood vessels there. And it makes sense. These are avenues of how the brain actually gets nutrition and oxygen. And if we don't take care of vascular health, which could be damaged with, you know, consumption of saturated fats and a ketogenic diet, forget about what the brain cells actually look like,
correct,
or brain health in general. And we now know that there's a big correlation between vascular disease and Alzheimer's disease and the deposition of amyloid beta protein. So it's important for us to stay away from sources of saturated fats and increase our, you know, whole food carbohydrates. Again, you know, I think I saw a question there saying, you know, what do you think about diets that are high in carbohydrates? It depends on the type of carbohydrates.
Correct.
It depends, you know, whether these individuals were eating apple fritters or apples. You know, apples are great for you. Apple fritters are terrible for you. So going into the nuance and looking at the details is incredibly important.
Correct. I mean, just because it's called vegan, it's not healthy. We have Oreos that are vegan, and then these lots of foods. But so it has to be whole food plant-based. It has to be complex carbohydrates. It has to be more fiber-centered than completely carbohydrate as well.
Right.
And if it's carbohydrate, it has to be good carbohydrate, meaning complex. So one, to tell you what that carbohydrate component means, it has to do with glycemic index, how quickly the sugar rises in your system. If the sugar is bound and in a complex way, then the sugar is going to be released slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important. The sugar molecule, whatever the form may be, is needed. It's the more preferred form of energy for the brain. It's the form of energy that's most prevalent and most useful for the brain. But for it to be used, it has to go through multiple processes in order to get into the cell. And if there's too much of it, the receptors that are needed for it to get into its cell are pulled in. So that's one example, is insulin resistance.
Yeah.
So you need appropriate amount of glucose released and slowly over time. That's where complex carbohydrates and fiber comes in.
Yeah.
That's why it's so important, not just in dementia, across all diseases. That's why there's correlation. High fiber, high complex carbohydrates, and lower cancer risk. So across the board, when it comes to diabetes, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And not just short term. The keto people will actually quote diabetes or insulin resistance as one of their successes. but no long-term evidence. Mm-hmm. No long-term evidence mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. Yes, we have questions.
Absolutely. Somebody said Morningstar corn dogs were just made vegan, not healthy.
Yes.
That's true. That's true. There was another question about high calories. So for, what about high calories, like high carbohydrates and diet associated with cognitive function? So again, it's the quality of the calories that matter more than the quantity. If you are eating a whole food plant-based diet, which is essentially, you know, a large amount of unprocessed carbohydrates in the form of vegetables and fruits and whole grains, legumes, beans are great for you, nuts and seeds, that's excellent, that's healthy. In general though, low calorie foods yes. are important for longevity, for brain health, for prevention of cancer and cardiovascular diseases in general. So that is an important caveat when it comes to calories.
So the, one of the few things that have been shown to consistently, even at the genetic level, prolong life and alter the epigenetics for longevity is lower calories.
Absolutely.
Be it in the animal models or human models, same thing. Now, nowadays there's this whole trend towards fasting and intermittent fasting and all that, which actually works, is great. But as public health people, we don't think that, we don't want to, it's impossible to apply that to large populations mm-hmm. over, you know, 3 days of fasting on water and or even shorter periods. It's going to be difficult. Another form of fasting or low calorie state that where you still feel satiated is whole food plant-based.
Right.
I mean, you take a whole bowl of vegetables and berries and whatever you put in as far as whole food plant-based is concerned.
Right.
The whole bowl is can't be more than 300 calories.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
the revolution of the 20th century was that that we've been able to create calorie density and nutrient sparsity. So in a small space, lots of calories. That's never been there for humanity throughout its evolution. Now, in a small donut with no frills, anywhere between 400 to 700 calories.
Okay.
Now, an average person has to run 5 miles to get rid of that. I mean, that's roughly speaking.
Right.
That 400 calories, and at the same time, you don't do anything as far as satiety is concerned. There are certain things that the stomach and your gustatory system has to experience to feel full.
Yeah.
One is size. That one donut's not gonna fill you up. It doesn't have the chewing characteristics and the mastication and other factors that make you full,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't. So you want more donuts. And before you know it, you have 2,000 calories. That would be 4 donuts. I've done that in the past. So
yeah, me too.
Yeah, so that's the problem. Calories are a problem. So eat foods that have lots of volume, make you chew and gets you filled up and have lower calories. And what's that? Whole food plant-based.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nothing better than that. Okay.
Exactly.
Shen says, what advice do you have for non-scientists who want to read scientific papers? That's a great question.
It is.
What are the main questions we should ask ourselves as we read a paper to determine whether it's credible or not? That's a great question.
I'll put in one.
Okay.
Who's sponsoring it?
Yes.
Although nowadays even the NIH, but that's one source.
Is okay.
If the egg industry isn't sponsoring a study, watch out. Even if the nut industry isn't sponsoring a study, watch out. Because
yeah.
it's going to have some intrinsic biases.
Right.
Other things to look at?
I would look at the method section. I always jump to the method
yes.
section because that's where the details are. You actually find out how long it took them to randomize these individuals, what were their characteristics, and there's always a table of characteristics in the paper where they show, you know, what were their cholesterol at the beginning, what was their cholesterol at the end, and their, you know, socioeconomic demographics, their age, and that you can actually see the differences between the cases and the control, if it is a case control study. So look at the method. I think that's a great place to start from, and then move forward.
And within the method, I fully agree.
Right.
How big was the study?
Population, the number of people,
and also the comparison group.
Right.
Now that's where lots of trickery takes
yes.
place. The comparison.
Right.
If you're comparing, you know,
coconut to butter.
Yeah, of course.
Coconut will be better.
Coconut oil is always better.
But does it mean coconut is good for you? No.
But there will be magazines out there that says coconut oil was better for you for brain health.
Well, that's where all the data came from.
Correct. Comparison
oil. You know, they basically compared coconut to butter and to processed foods, and coconut seemed to be much better, obviously. And the headlines were completely different. They said, you know, coconut cures your diseases, whether it's cardiovascular disease or brain disease, et cetera.
Same thing with fish. I mean, we don't have much data against it, although some TMAOs and others.
Right.
But every study that was coming out was fish versus processed meat.
Exactly.
Of course it's going to win out.
But there is no study that looks at fish compared to beans.
Yes.
I would love to do that. We'll do that.
Correct.
We'll do
absolutely.
That sometime.
Absolutely.
But if it's done, we know that beans will actually stand out more.
And another way that the pseudoscience, or as Aisha put it, crap science, comes out. I'm blaming her. It was actually me.
It was him.
Yeah. When they say, okay, the comparison group is carbohydrate versus fat. They don't tell you what kind of carbs were used.
Yeah.
In one major national study that we were a part of the working group, mm-hmm. and we would meet on a regular basis, finally somebody had the courage to ask, because major universities, and they found out that healthy diet, defined healthy diet, was not beneficial for brain health. So they said, what was the intervention?
Mm-hmm.
What was the healthy part that you added?
Mm-hmm.
And guess what the healthy part was? A bar.
It was a protein bar.
Yes.
They basically replaced a meal with a protein bar.
One meal.
Can you believe it? I could not believe it.
So a little work is needed.
Yeah.
The work is needed to figure out what, you know, go to the method section again. At the end, there's usually who's sponsoring it. Look at the method section. Look at how large the study is. The type of the study. Randomized controlled study versus observational going mm-hmm. forward, comparison groups.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's randomized, how do they, if it's not randomized, that's a problem, because in research, you always worry about bias.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, all bias is not nefarious. Sometimes everybody has bias. We have biases.
Of course, we're biased towards whole food plant-based diet.
Exactly. And they say,
reasons.
Oh, you're, one of the complaints is that you're biased because you eat whole food plant-based, therefore you know, you're biased. Well, I don't smoke either, so therefore, am I biased against studies that speak against smoking? That's a natural bias that we have, and we keep that in check, and we make sure that look at the data and see if there is extrinsic bias or different kinds of biases that are introduced,
mm-hmm.
such as the way that it's randomized, that they select, or even either overtly, like by thinking that they actively selected healthier people in the control group that they wanted,
mm-hmm.
or the other way around,
right.
or there was some kind of a problem with the study where more healthy people were selected in one group than the other. That's going to give you a result irrespective of the intervention.
Right.
So,
absolutely.
And then the size of the study, like we said, and the duration.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's beneficial short term is not necessarily beneficial long term.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the fourth level is something that's beneficial for one element of a disease, let's say insulin resistance. Lots of things can lower insulin resistance, but in the bigger picture of health, it's not good for you. Starvation.
Actually, yeah, which actually brings us to the question that Emmanuel is asking. She's saying, what do you make of providers like Dr. Walls, who seems to have many patients on a ketogenic diet who are having what appears to be a reversal of their symptoms? First of all, I would love to see her methods. Second, I would love to see where she actually starts from. Are these individuals with mild or moderate or severe cognitive impairment? Like we said earlier, you know, I think she's working with individuals who have severe, severe symptoms where brain cells are essentially not working properly at all, you know, because of the extensive damage, they're not able to have good metabolism, and the mitochondria are completely damaged, and those ketone bodies are providing alternative sources of fuel. Does that mean that they are actually changing the architecture of their brain? No. Does that mean that their arteries are getting better and they're getting better oxygenation of the brain? No. Does this mean that this is actually a long-term plan for them? No. We all know that ketogenic diet causes a lot of harm, so I'd be interested in looking at the details.
There's another problem here, anecdotal data. So YouTube, or Dr. YouTube,
mm-hmm.
every day you see somebody saying that this doctor came out on YouTube that said that their patients reversed their disease, whatever disease that may be. We had one of the largest sources of anecdotal data, 3,000 people. And in our study, there were people that had Alzheimer's that we put into our intervention, and they reversed their disease or significantly improved. But it was for the duration, for a given period. We never, not even in the book we wrote, nowhere did we say that that means that the diet can reverse Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. Anecdotal data have multiple problems. First of all, if nobody else is checking over you, the intrinsic bias is you're going to find what you want to find.
Absolutely.
That's the nature of things. Mm-hmm. Second of all, if it's not reproducible, that's the whole crux of science. If it's not reproducible, it's not valid. Third of all, anecdotes have the biggest problem is just a few sample of patients could be just incidental, or even more common, it's called placebo plus, or I call it placebo plus. Placebo is when somebody gets intervention, they feel better, and they'll report what they want, you'd say. Mm-hmm. Placebo plus is when they get extra attention, they're going to be doing more things that are outside of diet that's going to improve. So anecdotal data means nothing. Even though we had the largest anecdotal database of 3,000 people, the whole coconut oil revolution was based on an anecdote of one.
Right.
One doctor saying that she gave her husband coconut oil and everything was fine. We had 3,000 dementia patients, which many of them we put through a lifestyle intervention, and many of them for a period of time got improvement. We never claimed that that means that we can reverse Alzheimer's. We would have sold a million more books if we had.
Oh, yeah.
But ethically, it's not the right
thing. It's not the right thing.
So no. Dr. YouTube and Dr. Google, who comes up and says, my patients, means nothing.
Right.
If we ever come and tell you that my patient, we'll tell you stories about some patients, but we won't make that as the groundwork for a bigger picture.
Right.
So making, you know, the only times we've put on personal stories were with MCIs, mild cognitive impairment, which we have shown multiple times that at that pre-dementia stage or early dementia stage, you can definitely affect the disease. But still, it's anecdotal. And anecdotes, and YouTube and internet is being run by anecdotal science.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's basically it. We want to be respectful of your time too. Oh, we have a couple of minutes. Okay,
yes.
There's another question. Howard says, you know, in the case of Prozac, people switched between groups. Yeah, like an example of a study, you know, where all of these details are actually not depicted in the title at all.
By the way, Dr. Howard Rankin is a great friend of ours, incredible psychologist. You should definitely follow him.
Absolutely.
Brilliant mind. And we work with him on many, many projects, true to the science. And we have many other people like Colin Campbell and Dr. Esselstein and Dean Ornish and many others that are doing true, real good research right now that you can follow. And again, even any of them or any of us, if we just resort to anecdote, cut us off.
Yeah.
We have to give you the bigger picture. And even if we're not giving you the bigger picture, we should give it to you with the right weight. This is a good paper. This shows some evidence. Dr. Greger does that, Michael Greger.
Oh, he's amazing.
Amazing. And he never overstates the data, saying that, okay, this is the study that did 20, looked at 20 patients, therefore we should always, you know, blueberries reverse, you know, cure Alzheimer's. That's overstated. That's bombastic. That's false.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Absolutely. I'll just take one more question. And MCT still needs more studies, right? Absolutely. MCT seems to be promising, especially in animal studies. Right now, we don't necessarily know exactly the mechanism of action. It appears to boost mitochondrial function in the neurons, but it hasn't really been proven to be helpful in human studies. So we're looking forward to, you know, some specific studies like that, where that's essentially precision medicine.
But even there, even if it shows that mitochondria is boosted, one of the problems with cellular metabolism is when you overwork the cellular metabolism, you actually age the cell. So you have to look at it even at another dimension, which nobody's looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that you've activated the mitochondria a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that long-term you've prolonged life or reduced dementia? No. So sometimes it's like if you have a Ford Pinto. I'm aging myself. Aisha doesn't know about Ford Pintos. If you have a Ford Pinto and you put it on nitro fuel, it's going to run really well for a few minutes or a few hours.
Yeah.
But you've actually reduced its function over time.
I love that analogy.
Yes.
I don't get tired of it.
So That means that she's heard it a lot. But so if you use something that boosts mitochondria, you have to look at its long-term effect. One of the problems with just aging is overuse of the cellular mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not looking at these things three-dimensionally. We're looking at one molecule at one time period, and we say, look, we've just cured something. And with the animal models, they're even worse. These poor mice.
Yeah.
Everything works in mice, but none of them on humans. Human studies are the legitimate studies, and that's the only way we can validate.
Yes. Howard said Ford Pinto sounds like a bean.
Yeah, it looks like it. It looked like a bean, too. Howard, don't act like you're not from that age period. Yes, you are from that period, too. So with that...
Yes. So summary, ketogenic diet can be very unhealthy. There are no long-term studies of ketogenic diet's effect on brain health. And one should be very, very cautious about seeing these, you know, bombastic titles and headlines on the news saying ketogenic diet is good for brain health.
Or anything for that matter. Yeah.
Make sure you read the method section and make sure you see who is funding the study. Which is strange because John Hopkins scientists actually wrote this paper and I'm like so concerned about it now.
Yes, that's why we said coming to your universities and major journals. Medscape is not a journal, but it shares information, and it's seen by many people.
Right.
When you see a title like that in a Medscape, it's disturbing.
Right, absolutely. Thank you for joining. Please post your questions and comments, and we will get to them as soon as we can. If you have any topic that you would like for us to talk about and expand on it, do some investigation work on some papers, please directly message us, let us know, and we will have a conversation.